We've been looking at some of the campaign proposals of President-elect Donald Trump, and we've been talking with those who have ideas about how he might go about accomplishing them. Today, we're examining the first economic pledge that Trump made after he was elected this month, a promise that he made during his victory speech.
We are going to fix our inner cities and rebuild our highways, bridges, tunnels, airports, schools, hospitals. We're going to rebuild our infrastructure.
Those words sent construction stocks soaring, according to the Wall Street Journal. And while the details of Trump's plan are in flux, we do know some things: that he plans to rely heavily on private financing and that he wants to cut what he says is regulatory red tape. There is widespread agreement that the nation's infrastructure has been neglected for decades, but how should the White House prioritize the work? Well, Dan McNichol has a few ideas. He's the former chief spokesperson for the Big Dig, and he was a White House advisor on transportation issues for President George H.W. Bush. He offered 10 ideas for Trump in a recent New York Times article titled "Trump's Size Idea for a New President: Build Something Inspiring." Welcome back, Dan.
Well, thanks for having me, Deb.
So some folks say we are in an infrastructure crisis. Would you agree with that? And would you agree with the level of infrastructure repair that Trump is talking about?
I believe we are in an infrastructure crisis. I think we've been in one for far too long. And I would like to think this is the beginning of an infrastructure renaissance that has not taken place. There's been many false starts to it.
So how much money? Of course, it always comes down to money. So how much money are you suggesting? Because there are a lot of estimates out there over what would be needed, when it would be needed. Do we talk about what's needed during the Trump presidency to end of 2020? Do we go beyond that? What would you say an amount might be needed in the years of a Trump presidency by 2020?
We are a massive nation with massive infrastructure needs and massive infrastructure complexes. I would say, and this is not an original thought, the American Society of Civil Engineers is putting out a number there of $3 trillion plus. Donald Trump's proposal for $1 trillion in 10 years, that would be a beginning. That would be a badly needed beginning.
But that's only a third.
Right.
So how do you think, and there's already a lot of fighting about where the trillion would come from. So, I mean, this $3 trillion number, is it even close to realistic?
I think it is. And it's not to get everything to an A-plus standard. It's meant to get things moving, mostly us in traffic. And secondly, it's higher speed internet. It's more efficiency in the air with planes. It's all about movement. Almost all that always we think of ourselves, but it's also the movement of goods, whether it's oil in a pipeline or water through water lines. Mm. It's all about freeing up the flow. Any great economy in the world is going to depend on infrastructure to support its foundations. It's the support of its societal institutions. And our infrastructure, I like to think, I don't like it, but I like to think that it's symbolic of the fractures and cracks in government. I'm not even sure. The more I look at this, the more I do this, the more I think our infrastructure is failing, but I think it's our political system, really, that is failing, and therefore our infrastructure is failing with it. I think the cracks in the bridges and the asphalt are indicative of the breakdown in our political system.
You know, a lot of folks certainly, including President-elect Trump, have commented on the infrastructure in places overseas compared to what's in the United States. Why is that? I mean, why does it seem as if many other countries have a much more advanced rail system, high-speed rail system, and other things than we do?
Because they do.
And why?
That's a good question. The various reasons. In China, they skipped a whole half century and didn't build anything or much of anything. And then suddenly Deng Xiaoping launched China into the new age. The World Bank said he raised 450,000 people out of poverty by building roads. And roads leads to other forms of transportation like high-speed rail in China and subways in China. I spent a lot of time in China specifically. It's been exciting to watch the last 10 years. Sometimes horrifically, sometimes fantastically, they are building at enormous systems at very fast speeds of completion. They're subway systems. They have many, many milling machines down there building Shanghai subway system. We might have two going on in New York right now.
Mm. And I'm just, again, if we go back to the affordability question, there are many folks who say that Donald Trump's financing plan for this has some holes in it, and they disagree with some of the suggestions that he's made about using the private sector and using private money and what that could mean to privatizing public functions, and whether tax cuts might just benefit those who are in charge of the projects and not the folks working on the projects and the general public. I mean, how have other countries and other presidents in the U.S., remind us, how have they financed massive public works projects like this?
Well, in this country, our biggest massive public works project, the U.S. interstate system, up until recently the largest in the world, until China's interstate system, interprovincial system, eclipsed us, that was funded through a gas tax. Other countries have used private funding and public funding. We don't like to draw from our general fund often, and there's been a lot of fighting over that in the last 10 years. Who's going to pay for it? Is there going to be a gas tax? The old model seems to be broken for many reasons. The old model of the gas tax, people are getting much more mileage in their cars, so the gas tax is not giving what it used to give. People are using alternative energy for their cars, like a Tesla or a Prius, so that means there's no contribution whatsoever. But the private spend that Donald Trump seems to be focused on, that has a lot of possibilities, but it's appropriate and inappropriate. It's appropriate in some categories of infrastructure. It's inappropriate in others. Where I see it very appropriate and very successful, rail, transportation, places where you can get a meter and you can charge for it, often is attractive to the private sector because they can gauge how they're going to return their investment. Mm-hmm. And on things like water and schools, I don't think it belongs there. So it's a tough play, but around the world, Deb, 25% of infrastructure, for example, in Canada, is privately funded. So this 100% of their public infrastructure, 25% of it is funded by the private sector. Mm-hmm. And we do about 1% here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge opportunity, even if you just double the 1 to 2, triple it to 3%.
But how do you make sure that private interests then aren't really benefiting and controlling something like this, which is supposed to be for the public, and running it as a profit motive?
Well, that's a very good point. The Indiana Toll Road was a disaster, and the people who launched that project privately ended up filing for bankruptcy, I believe. Mm-hmm. And Indiana takes that road back, and then they have control of it again. But what's a problem is sometimes these private ventures do look at it as a business, and they run it sometimes inefficiently as far as the public's concerned, more efficiently for themselves. But you want private sectors to be able to profit from this. You want them to be able to see the risk, see the reward, and go in there and make that project happen faster than it would have otherwise. One of the biggest crimes I see is a lot of badly needed projects that will never get built or get built 10 years or 15 years too late or later than they should. The sooner people can start using it, the faster the quality of their life will improve.
Now, you made a list in the New York Times of 10 projects.
Jim Stewart invited me to contribute to his article and asked me to come up with a list of 10 projects I would propose to Donald Trump.
Now, we should say your list includes California's high-speed rail project, which you're working on.
That's correct.
So we're going to get that right out in front. But the top of your list is actually another rail project. Explain, please.
Yeah, exactly. The Hudson River Tunnel. My cousin is a commuter from New Jersey, trying to get to Lower Manhattan and then up to the Upper East Side for his job, and has an app on his phone because the tunnel is so unreliable. Built in, I think, 1909. It's a tunnel that was severely, maybe even fatally damaged by Hurricane Sandy. It's anemic, to say the least. But future high-speed trains, we'd like to think, at least Amtrak train and commuter trains, would be rolling through that tunnel. And if you think of Manhattan as a financial capital to the United States, arguably the world, we need a lot better connection there. And cars are just not going to cut it. We don't need another GW Bridge. We need more rails. We need fast trains. China's delivering trains that travel at 300, 400 miles an hour. We need to think in those terms.
Mm. You also recommend the Miami Seawall.
You know, on the East Coast, there's just so much concern about another great flood, whether that comes from sea rise or whether it comes from a hurricane, a natural disaster. 99% of Miami, from what I read, would be underwater with a 5-foot sea rise. That's horrific. 99% of Miami Beach. And Miami, of all the cities and all the places on the coast, all those major cities on the coast, is probably the most susceptible. So I thought start there. But Mayor Bloomberg left his office with a $20 billion plan to do a protective wall around New York. New Orleans, after $15 billion, has it's like a medieval city. It's completely protected. And because of that seawall they built after Katrina, Money is now flowing into New Orleans. Life is starting to look a little bit more normal in New Orleans. These levees are dumb. They don't have a lot of use until you need them desperately.
Mm-hmm. You know, we mentioned the big dig, which has become synonymous with huge government expense. Right? It cost a lot more than it was expected to. Also, bureaucracy. Were there lessons learned in that project that you apply to this list that you have now?
No, because I put all the prices down on the list. No, but yeah, we learned a lot of lessons on that project, and the list is very long. But in short, when you're taking on a public initiative like this, you have to have public support, and a lot of these projects have 50-50 support. That's not enough, and the reason they often don't is because there's not enough transparency, or at least not enough understanding and education about what a project will do. But I would say, on the very personally, I was a part of the group to show off the project, and I didn't think we got enough chance to show it off. The more people were allowed into the tunnels, the more they were allowed to walk on the bridge, the more they understood what we were building. And I think there was woefully little of that on the Big Dig. There should be more of that in future projects.
What kind of feedback have you gotten since this New York Times article?
Well, I was on MSNBC on Saturday for 5 minutes in the morning talking about this. I've been asked to speak in front of groups that are trying to figure this out, like we all are right there, right here at this table. And it's got my publicist and publisher interested in doing a book, a memoir about a circumnavigation that I did in a 1949 Hudson around America, looking for infrastructure issues, trying to see if there really was a crisis during 2013 to 2015.
And you say, yes, there is. Yes, we need to fix it. Yes, Mr. President, this is what I think you should do. Have you heard from him?
I haven't heard from the Donald yet, but Jim Stewart from the New York Times heard from his spokeswoman the day the story came out, and she said, the Donald liked it. He saw it and he liked it. Okay. I think he likes to see himself as a developer, so maybe this is appeasing to his ego.
Okay. Dan McNichols, former chief spokesperson for the Big Dig and White House advisor on transportation issues for President George H.W. Bush. He offered 10 project ideas to President-elect Trump in a recent New York Times article titled Trump-Size Ideas for a New President Build Something. Thanks very much for being with us, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Deb.
Stay with us. Coming up, we'll talk with a Massachusetts professor who says she was threatened over her list of fake news sites. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.